So as we've been walking through these last words of Jesus on the cross, we come to the third word this week, and it comes from John 19, verses 23 through 27. It says this: when the soldiers had crucified Jesus, they took his garments and divided them into four parts, one part for each soldier, also his tunic. But the tunic was seamless, woven from in one piece from top to bottom. So they said to one another, "Let us not tear it, but cast lots for it to see whose it shall be." This was so to fulfill the scripture, which says that they divided my garments among them, and for my clothing they cast lots. So the soldiers did these things, but standing by the cross of Jesus were his mother's sister, Mary the wife of Clopas, and Mary Magdalene. When Jesus saw his mother and the disciple whom he loved standing nearby, he said to his mother, "Woman, behold your son." Then he said to the disciple, "Behold your mother." And from that hour, the disciple took her to his own home. It's interesting that if you've been here the last couple weeks and followed along with these last words of Jesus, the first of the last three aren't concerned with himself. And if it were me up on that cross, hanging in that pain and that agony, I guarantee I would be praying for myself and be praying for what I needed and for the comfort and the pain that I would have been in. But Jesus says, no, his first words were to those who were actually murdering him. In Luke 23:34, it says, "Father, forgive them, for they know not what they do." The second word was devoted to the terrorist. We called him a terrorist last week, and hanging on the cross next to him in Luke 23:43, it said, "Truly, I say to you, today you will be with me in paradise." And then this morning we saw the words of Jesus directed to Mary, his mother, and to his best friend, John. "Woman, behold your son. Behold your mother." And it's amazing, again, to consider that in the midst of this pain and anguish and agony that Jesus is suffering, that the thoughts, again, aren't about himself, aren't about what he needs or anything about him, but he's looking at those around him. He sees his mother and his friend, probably his best friend, John, and he considers what his mother needs at that moment, considers what the needs of even John, I think, at that moment are, and decides to make a decision or decides to make and says something that is so important and impactful, especially for Mary. And I think about myself as a father, and I want to apologize a little to my kids. They are wonderful kids. So my comment earlier about them not listening was not true. That was just a joke. So I just want to make sure you know that they are wonderful kids and listen pretty well. And so thinking about the times as a father, though, with making decisions and doing things that I think are good fatherly things or things that, you know, would make me a good dad, I don't want to do them when I am tired, when I'm worn out, and when I'm sick. Right, in those times where I physically or emotionally or whatever do not feel well, it's hard for me to make the choices that what I would think a good father would make. Or even if I just want to sit in front of the TV for a while or close my eyes for a few minutes or enjoy the coffee while it's still hot. Those are the kind of times where it's hard to say, yeah, I'll do this. When I hear them say, "Daddy, watch this." And I don't know if your kids did that, but I have kids that want me to watch them a lot. I don't know if that's usual but It's great. I hope they keep doing it. But, or, you know, things like, Daddy, come play with me. Or, Daddy, are we going to go outside and do something? Or whatever it is. And, you know, as a father, and, you know, I want to do those things, right? I want to watch them. And I've watched so many things out of the corner of my eye over my life. That was great. Good job. Anyway, so, and I've done, you know, I want to do those things. I want to play games with them. I want to sit down on the floor with them and wrestle or do whatever they want to do, even if I don't necessarily enjoy it that much. I want to. But again, thinking about Jesus on the cross, the decision to, when he's so worn, beyond tired, beyond all these things and in pain and anguish, the fact that he makes a decision that is a good son decision, but also just a wonderful person decision. I think we all struggle at those times to do things that we think are what's best or what's right when the pain is so difficult. And so it's thinking about the pain and the situation that they're facing, we can look at Mary as well, right? Mary's mother looking at her son, and those of you who had kids, whether you're a mother or a father, you're looking at the pain and the anguish that maybe a child goes through. And you can just imagine Mary's probably feeling a lot of those things, maybe even some anger. anger towards the situation, thoughts of revenge, possibly seeing her child, her oldest child, suffer in that way, especially knowing that he's completely innocent of the charges that they're crucifying him for. And so thinking about the emotions and the pain that Mary has, and imagine ourselves in that situation, and maybe you've had children that have suffered horribly, and you feel for them, and you relate, you know, and you just, you, maybe you think anger thoughts or revenge thoughts, and Mary's probably there. What's so important, I think, from these verses that we read in John 19 is that Mary, looking up at Jesus on that cross, isn't alone. There are other people with her. And despite the ramifications for those that might have shown up to support Jesus, because support of a criminal in that context could have led to arrest and you know, your own crucifixion. And so we understand maybe why Mary might put herself in jeopardy to be there for her son, but it's amazing that there are other people with her. There are women with her. John is with her. And so I start to think about the situation again, the cost that it would have been maybe for these people that are with her. Are there people in our lives, are there people in your life that would stand with you despite all the things going around or despite some of the consequences that it may be to be with you? Because we all need people in our lives to be with us. That's one of the reasons Jesus gave us the church, is to be with each other. We weren't meant to live in isolation. And even at the end of Jesus' life, he's not in isolation or meant to suffer in isolation as well. I've been reading this daily devotional, and if you struggle with kind of self-esteem and self-worth kind of things, if you're or maybe even a little depression kind of stuff, like I do, I struggle with those things regularly. If you struggle with that, there's a really great book called You Are the Beloved. You Are the Beloved. It's these daily kind of excerpts from, I think, a man named, excerpts from a from books by a man named Henry Nouwen. And I just strongly, just as a plug, strongly encourage you to look that up. It's a great book, You Are the Beloved by Henry Nouwen. And I've loved it. I've been going through it since the beginning of the year. But Henry Nouwen, despite all the wonderful things he says, has this important definition, I think, for us this morning of what a priest is. And he says this: a priest is a compassionate being with. A priest is a compassionate being with. And you kind of maybe wonder why, what does that matter to us? Well, priests, you know, we in our context, in our church, don't have maybe a lot of pull or saying. We don't have priests in different contexts or in any context at this point. But the priest, throughout church history, throughout even the Old Testament, has been an instrumental part of the work in the church. And in fact, when we look at the Bible, when we look at the New Testament over and over again, it looks to be it seems that Jesus is trying to tell us, Paul is trying to tell us, and even Peter and different others are trying to tell us that a priest, that every single one of us should function as a priest. That the pastor isn't the only one that should be the priest. That, you know, any other hired or professional people that we think are part of the church are the only ones that act in this way. We are all called to be priests. In fact, 1 Peter 2:9 says this: you are a chosen race, a royal priesthood, a holy nation, a people of for your own possession, and for this purpose, that you might, or you may proclaim the excellencies of him who called you out of darkness into his marvelous light. A royal priesthood. We are all called to be priests. We are all called to function in a way that we are compassionate with others. We are compassionately with others. And that means showing up in the hard times. That means showing up when things aren't going well, when there's a loss, when there's a loss of a job, when there's a loss of a friend, when there's a loss of a family member, or there's something tumultuous going on in life. That compassionate being with is that priestly duty that all of us, those of us that are followers of Christ, all share together. Compassionate being withers. And the one thing I think that sticks out to me about this is sometimes we are hesitant. Sometimes we don't jump into that for various reasons. I was speaking to one of our local funeral directors a few weeks ago, and he was talking about how sometimes at people come up to him and say, I don't like to go to funerals, I don't like to go to visitations because I don't know what to say. I don't know how to interact with this family that's just lost somebody. And his advice is my advice as well, is sometimes all you need to do is just show up. Just say, I'm sorry, shake a hand, give a hug or something like that, and that's it. But we get so caught up in, I want to say the right thing, or I want to do this thing to make it better, or I want to, you know, pull all these things together. But so often for those around us, it's just showing up. It's just being with, and it's really joining with. I think in so many ways it's joining with God, because God is already at work in that person. God is already at work in that situation. So joining with God to be with that other person. George Truett, I think, says this well. He was a pastor, an effective pastor for decades in Texas, and his heart was broken. His heart was broken because he, in a hunting accident, killed his best friend. His daughter, following that experience, said that she never heard him laugh again. George Truett had this radio program, and every day that he closed that program, he would say this. He would say, be good to everybody, because everybody is having a hard time. Be good to everybody, because everybody is having a hard time. And I think we get so caught up in seeing how the person reacts to us in the face value of where someone is, or the, you know, experience that we may have had once or twice with somebody, that we forget that there's something going on underneath. And if nothing else, and this is to me so important, nothing else, God is working in that person. It may be so hard to see in some people, right? You all know the people like that, right? But God is working in them. And God calls us to come alongside with him, to be with others as well. Leonard Sweet says it this way in his book, Nudge. Sometimes it's less about our witness than our withness. In fact, our best witness is our withness. To be a witness is to have withness. Being with others is so important. Or just to kind of one more story, there's a teenager, an ingenious teenager, who would read bedtime stories to his little sister. And he just got tired of doing that over and over. It was always the same story every night. And finally, he recorded himself reading her favorite story. And so he hands this recording to her and says, you know, this is now you can listen to this story anytime you want. You don't need me around. You don't need me to read it to you. And so he gives it to his little sister, and his little sister looks at the tape and looks at him and says, but this doesn't have a lap. And I think that's so important for all of us to realize the withness and the being with and the connecting with and the empathy that needs. And I struggle with empathy. I'm just going to be honest with you. I have a hard time feeling the feelings that other people feel at times. Empathy is just putting ourselves in other people's shoes. And our culture is, in general, struggles with empathy. We struggle with looking at other people and seeing, not just seeing how they see the world, but feeling how they feel the world. But empathy is such a big part of compassionate being with, of connecting with others, to truly feel what another person is feeling. But at the scene at the cross where Mary with her friends and John, there's empathy. There's empathy for one another. They're feeling the feelings and the pain and the turmoil of seeing Jesus up on that cross. Clearly, Jesus can see what's happening, and he's, like the video kind of shared, he's experiencing some of the pain that others around him are feeling as well. And I think that is what was really unique about some of the things Jesus says, is you can see the empathy in him, the empathy he has for those that he's around. And so he takes focus of his mother, he takes focus of his friend, and he decides he wants to do something in that way. He wants to be a priest for them. He cares for them. And in that culture, caring for his mother in that way, by making that declaration of saying, basically passing on his responsibility as the oldest son to John, the disciple, the beloved disciple John, he's taking care of his mother, because it seems like Joseph, Mary's husband, is gone for whatever reason. I don't know where the other kids are, Mary's other kids are, but it seems like Mary's on her own. And a woman at that time on her own would have been trampled on, would have been abused, would have been taken advantage of, basically would have been kind of thrown out in the street to fend for herself. And so for Jesus to have that compassion for his mother, to say, John, will you please take her? Take her into your home. Love her like a mother. And John hears those words. And we can see the response that he has. And from that hour, the disciple took her into his home. John honors Jesus' request and apparently cares for Mary as if she were her own mother. And it's interesting to me that John's reaction there, that John's stepping up to that plate, is in complete contrast to what others around him has done. There's actually a phrase a couple chapters earlier that is identical to that went to their own home or into his own home, that is in context to all of the other disciples, all of the other people that were following Jesus that promised to stay with him, chose to do when the going got tough. When they came to arrest Jesus, it says in there that the disciples, those that followed him, everyone else around him, went to his own home. Because that's what our culture does a lot of times. That's what most people choose to do. I'm going to go and do my own thing. I'm going to go take care of myself. I'm going to deal with my own emotions. Instead of choosing like John did to say, no, I'm going to be there. I'm going to be with. I'm going to connect to. And again, I think that is why we have a church. That is why we are here this morning. To be with. To uplift, to encourage. Because John knew that even though it was hard, he had things that he needed to do. His pain and Jesus' pain didn't absolve him from any responsibilities. And our pain also does not absolve us from any of our responsibilities. And again, God calls us, especially those of us that are followers of God, despite our pain, despite our own prerogative, despite our own agendas, God calls us to be priests. And that's hard, right? Because I'm like you. Sometimes I don't know what to say at a funeral. I don't know what to say when someone loses their job. I don't know what to say when things aren't going right. And I feel like I fail pretty miserably to try to encourage and support and be with. But sometimes it's just about sitting next to somebody. A year ago, I suppose, probably now, when I was dealing with some depression, there was a moment, and I think I've said this or written this before, where someone just came and sat by me. And to me, that was just so meaningful and so important. And when we can do that for each other, just to listen, just to ask some questions, to be with each other, so important for how we move forward in our lives. And Jesus knew this. He knew it to the point that when he was dealing with stuff he needed to, when he was dealing with all this pain and anguish and his own things going on, he looked at Mary and he looked at John and he says, this needs to be taken care of. But I don't know if I can overemphasize the meaning for me anyway with this. But there's a story, and I don't know if it's true or not, but to me, if it's not true, I really hope it is. And if not, it's important for us to have this image, I think, anyway. There was a teacher, and she asked her students to list all of the names of the other students in the room. So everyone wrote everybody else's names on two sheets of paper and left enough room between each name to write some things down. And then she told them to write the nicest thing they could think of for the other students, about their other classmates, and write it down. So they took the rest of the class period, and each student, just about the other students in the class, wrote the nicest thing they could think of. They turned all the papers in, and the teacher that Saturday wrote all the papers, or took a piece of paper for each student and wrote down all of these things that their classmates had said about them. And so on Monday morning, she starts to hand out the list, and before long, the students are all smiling. Really? I didn't know that, you know, anyone thought that about me. I didn't think I mattered too much to anyone. I didn't know that someone liked me that much. And they talked a little bit about that, and no one ever then again after that day mentioned the papers, and the teacher didn't know if they went home and talked to their parents or they talked to each other about it between classes or anything like that. But it seemed to just kind of go by the wayside and moved on. Years later, One of the students in that class was killed in Vietnam. And the teacher attends the funeral of that special student. And the church was packed with his friends, and one by one they took their turn walking past the coffin, and the teacher being the last one. And as they stood there after the service and everything is taken care of, one of the soldiers who acted as the pallbearer came up to the teacher and said, "Were you Mark's math teacher?" And she nods and said, well, yes. And the soldier says, well, Mark talked quite a bit about you. And then after the funeral, a little bit later, some of Mark's former classmates went together to a luncheon. And Mark's mother and father were there, obviously wanting to speak to the teacher. "We want to show you something," the father says. And he pulls out his wallet, picks something out of it, and hands it to the teacher and says, "We found this. We found this on Mark's body when he was killed, and we thought you might recognize it." Opening the billfold, or opening the paper, the teacher saw two pieces of worn notebook paper that had obviously been taped, folded, and refolded many times. And the teacher knew, without really looking too closely, exactly what that paper was. It was the list of all the nice things that his classmates had said to him so many years ago. "Thank you so much for doing that," Mark's mother said. As you can see, Mark treasured it. All of Mark's former classmates started to gather around. Charlie smiled sheepishly and said, "You know what, I have my list. It's in the top drawer of my desk at home." Chuck's wife said, "Chuck asked me to put it in my wedding album, in our wedding album." "I have mine too," Marilyn said. "It's in my diary." Vicky, another classmate, reached into her pocket and pulled out her wallet and showed her worn and frazzled list to the group. "I carry mine with me as well, all the time," Vicky said. "I think we all saved ours," she said. And the teacher then sat down and finally cried. He cried for Mark and all of his friends, that they would never see him again. I have a book in my office filled with things like that. There are days that I need to pull that out, and someone 10 years ago, 15 years ago, wrote, "Thank you for this," or "I appreciate this." And to me, that's huge. To me, that's so important. A message here, a note here, a kind word here, a hug here. And it's not just, "Well, I did it once, right? Well, I hugged her 10 years ago. She should know that I care about her, and we're good to go." It's continually and regularly reaching out, being with others that Jesus does here, and that as priests, Jesus calls us to do for each other. Let's pray. Gracious Father, I am so thankful that I am a part of a church that I feel so encouraged and loved and important. And I just pray that there are others in this room that feel that from me, but feel that even more from each other. That withness of being priests for each other, compassionately being with others, becomes a foundation for us moving forward. And I just pray that you lead and guide and direct us more towards you. Praise in Jesus' name. Amen. Worship team can come on forward. And for our invitation song, we're just going to open the floor. If you feel like even you need a little encouragement this morning and just need someone to pray for you or want to share something where you're at or what you're dealing with, and just be open and honest and allow us to be able to be with you, that opportunity is now as well. So why don't we stand and sing The Way of the Cross?